chairperson. Good morning, friends. My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. My pleasure and privilege this morning to read to you the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And keep an open mind. This is my opinion only. But without the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, not only would I not be here reading them to you, I wouldn't be here at all. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
I will now ask Myrna to come up and read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. My name is Myrna, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Marty. All right, I guess I should qualify a little bit for being up here. And as I said before, my name is Stella, and I'm an alcoholic. And I can say that I started drinking when I was 21 years old. And by 28, I think I'd had all the hell I could out of this illness I have, alcoholism. And I'd had 6 months sobriety. I was one of the people who eventually got this program. We say that some people make it the first time they come through the door, they may never take another drink. And some eventually make it, and that was me. And there's a small margin, I like to think, who never make it at all. And I hope we're all winners tonight. I hope that's none of us. And I say that's because they're constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Some people say they don't know how this program works. But I know how it works. H-O-W means honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. All right, so we have now two speakers today. And the subject today is step 6 and 7, but we have two speakers, and they can speak on the subject or whatever they want to speak on. And I'll call the first speaker. The first speaker is Glenn A. Colgagan from B.C. Would you come up here, please?
Good morning. My name is Glenn, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Glenn.
It's a little more relaxing than the meeting last night. Coquitlam's a little town about 10 miles east of Vancouver. So my home group is the Newport Men's in Port Coquitlam, which is just right beside Coquitlam. And we meet on a Thursday night at 8:30. So if any of you gentlemen are coming through Coquitlam, Vancouver, you can give us a call. It's Newport Men's. A fellow from Calgary last night was talking about his group. They call the older fellows the God's waiting room. We're a little rougher in our group. We call them the Coffin Dodgers. We have some great old-timers in our group. Our longest member is 46 years, and then we have a treatment center that sends a busload every Thursday night. So we have guys with 46 years and guys with 12 days, 10 days, 7 days, that sort of thing. This is my, I was got very fortunate. I got sober June 17th, 1982, and I made it to Montreal in 1985, and this is my fifth world conference. So the longer I stay sober, the better they get. It's just amazing how it goes. So, and I've already saving up my money for San Antonio. I wrote down some stuff because, you know, 6 in the morning, it's 3 o'clock in the morning in Vancouver, so it's been a long weekend. So I just wrote a few things down so I can try and stay on the topic. Into action, step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. It says it separates the men from the boys. And some of those defects of character, you know, they're hard to get rid of. They're really hard. I haven't got rid of them all. Actually, I get my 23-year cake next Thursday at our group, so I still haven't got rid of them all. But I'm working on them. It says in the 12x12, I got the 12x12 out last week, and I started making notes on it, and I'm thinking, gee, I've been doing this for 23 years, and there's still stuff I haven't. They pop out at you, and I'm thinking, I don't remember reading that before. And I was very fortunate. I got into my first step group when I was in my first year of sobriety. It was a men's step group, and I've been going ever since. And in our step group, we have guys who have been going together for about 25 years, and there's 12 of us. And last year we added up the total, and it was 258 years of sobriety between the 12 guys in our step group. And I'm one of the youngest ones. We have a couple with 2 years sobriety as well. So getting into the steps was the most important thing that ever happened to me, and it happened right away. It was great because I started to learn. I met all the right people. And I am one of the fortunate ones that came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't had a drink since. I didn't go back out, and I hear the stories out there, and I couldn't handle it anymore out there. It was just too tough. But when I go back through my history, I'm thinking, let's see now, bottle of vodka in my locker in grade 11 and 12, impaired charge at 18, worked in a bunch of bars and that sort of thing. And I got here when I was 34 years old, and I guess that was enough. And my daughter was 3 years old when I got sober, and this year she graduated from Simon Fraser University. My son has just turned 21. He turned 21 on the 20th of June, so he's never seen me drink. And we have a great time. My son's a piper, my daughter's a drummer, so I spend a lot of time in Scotland. I've been there 5 times in the last 7 years for the World Championships, and Simon Fraser University wins quite often. So, I don't know, my son piped me in on my 20th cake. I mean, it's just an amazing program, you know. But anyway, on the defects of character, it says in the book there that you have to be willing. The willingness is the main part about step 6, being willing to try it. And it says you can repeatedly keep trying it in step 6. Keep trying, keep trying, keep trying until you can get it. Some of the defects of character I had when I was drinking, I kept when I was getting sober, I mean, when I was sober. One of the worst ones I had was gossip, because I like to talk about people when I was drinking to make myself feel better. Like I would knock them down to build myself up. And you feel guilty about it after. You think about it after a while and what you've done to people and how you've assassinated them. And it's not a nice feeling. And you know you're doing wrong. That's one thing about being an alcoholic. You know the difference between right and wrong. I mean, most of us were brought up to know the difference between right and wrong. We didn't do. We made some bad choices, but we knew the difference. And I couldn't quit by myself. I feel I had a spiritual awakening the day I phoned Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. I was sitting in my backyard and I'm looking at my house and I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to lose all this if I'm not careful. And I phoned Alcoholics that night and I went to my first meeting on June 16th. I always make my date a day later because I always figure I still had so much alcohol in me that I was probably got sober for that first day. But we try, according to the book. We're not saints, and that's the one thing that I really like, is we're not saints. I still have problems with certain parts of my character defects. They still pop up once in a while, but I do keep trying, and I'm not going to be perfect, and they're still going to pop up, but what can I do about it? I just keep working on it. I am willing to have them gone. I want to make sure they're out of my life, because it makes my life a lot easier. I've met all the right people. My first sponsor, Walter, he died, he had 41 years of sobriety. And he said, if he can die sober and never intentionally hurt anybody, then he's done right in AA. And that's what I want to do too. Die sober, never intentionally hurt anybody, because it never comes back to get you. We strive for patient improvement of ridding ourselves of our defects. And it is patience. You have to take time to get rid of the defects. Some of the stuff I did when I was young, it mind boggles. You know, it's mind boggling what happened, what I did. And I can't do anything about it. I did it. I take responsibility for it. And, I'm not going to dwell on it. It happened. But I can't do anything more about it. So some of these defects of character I've never done since I came back in. I remember I used to refer to visiting people's houses when they weren't home when I was younger. And things like that. And some of the stuff I got into was just, I'm lucky I didn't end up in jail. But I only had one night. That was for an impaired charge. So I was very lucky. Justifiable anger is one of the other ones. I mean, driving down the road and you know somebody's going to do something and things happen and you start to get excited. But there was a man in our East Side men's group and he always said, if you know it's going to happen, you expect it to happen and it does happen, then you can't get upset about it because you know it's going to happen anyway, so why worry about it? So I'm a lot calmer now than I used to be and I just take my time. You know, there's no rush. Why would I rush? I don't have anywhere to go that important that I have to hurry through things. The main thing about step six is to make a beginning and keep trying. Some of the things we aren't quite ready to give up, hopefully we'll give them up later. But if you say never, 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 I'm never going to give these things up, then you've got a problem. So I've never said I won't try and give anything up. I'm always willing to try and give up things. And like I say, they flare up every once in a while. It's going to happen to everybody. It happened to me and it'll happen to you probably too. In step seven, they humbly asked them to remove our shortcomings. Now, when I saw the word humble, I thought that meant that people walked all over you. You had to, anything that happened, you couldn't talk back, you couldn't fight back, you couldn't do your own thing. But I found, once I've been in the program for a while, being humble, but I fight back a lot better than I used to when I was drinking because I used to feel so guilty about what I was doing. You know, they kept telling me that the difference between an alcoholic and a heavy drinker, you know, the alcoholic has a conscience. You wake up the next morning like, God, why did I do that? And the heavy drinker just wakes up and says, hey, that was great. Let's go do it again. Well, I felt so guilty about it. I would work so hard and try and do things so perfectly because I was and I was ashamed of myself, you know, what I was doing. But letting people walk all over you, it doesn't happen. Once you've been sober for a while, you just stand up. And as long as you don't react to them the way you used to, like sometimes, I haven't had a fight since I was sober, you know. I used to be a bouncer in a few bars in Vancouver, and I played rugby for years, which used to get rid of my aggression. But if you can stay without a reaction to some of these things, it really helps. I have a guy I sponsor who, he likes material things. And I was talking to him last night. As a matter of fact, the two guys that I'm staying with in the hotel, they said, you know, when you go out this morning, really close the door quietly because, you know, we want to get our sleep. But it says that there comes to a point when you're going to be demanding too much. And you can't be spiritual and you can't, your values and your materials, you know, if you try and gather too many materials, you lose the spirituality and your character building. My friend Frank, he likes to be called the Honorable Nice Frank. He's the one that got me up speaking. He always says, if you've got a roof over your house and you've got food, you know, what more can you want? And like somebody was saying the other night, it is nice to have material things. I enjoy having material things. And if I hadn't been sober for 23 years, I probably wouldn't have got them. But I have got them, and I've got a few things. And I worked for the phone company for 30 years, and I was fortunate enough. A couple of years ago, they wanted to get rid of 6,000 people in B.C., and I said, pick me, and they did. So I'm gone. So now I'm doing background work in the movie industry for 10 bucks an hour and having a great time. I really love it. I've got a lot of movies being made out in Vancouver. It's a great thing. It's hard to get a belief in a higher power when all you're looking for is your own comfort. If you're always looking to get ahead, get this, get that, your higher power is going to have a problem getting through to you, because the material things are nice, but they're not all being all important. And it blocks off, according to our book, the power of the higher power coming into your life. So I try not to worry about things anymore. I've got enough, you know, to live on. And now that I took the early retirement, I spend about 10 bucks a week. I play pool at the senior center for 50 cents for the whole day, and coffee's 50 cents. And, I mean, I don't spend as much money anymore. It's great. You just don't need the money. It says in the book, the basic ingredient of humility is desire to seek and do God's will. And that's what I try and do. I don't go out of my... I'm not religious. I haven't been to church except for AA meetings since I got sober. I go Christmas and Easter and listen to the choir, that sort of thing. But I had a higher power before I came in, before I started drinking. I used to sing in the church choir when I was about 14 and never went back. You know, I just didn't find it wasn't for me. But because I don't know, there's a spiritual part. They always say there's no religion in AA. It's a spiritual part. And that's what I find. It's a spiritual thing for me. It's... I don't talk about it too much. I don't go to church, and I don't do a lot of that stuff. But I think my first humbling was when I did phone Alcoholics Anonymous and admitted I needed help. That was when I first became humble in AA. Before I even got into AA, was by phoning them. And I'd read about it. I'd seen the big book in people's houses. I went to the library, and I got it out. And I read John Barleycorn and all these articles. And, you know, I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous because I hear people say I had 12 impaired charges, I got thrown in jail 6 times, and I didn't know alcohol was my problem. Well, I knew alcohol was my problem when I was 13 or 14 years old, because it changed my personality. And that I've been told that if you're an alcoholic, your personality changes when you drink, and mine certainly changed. I wasn't who I was supposed to be, and I wasn't a bad guy. I just did some stupid things, and usually alcohol was involved. But it's hard to be self-centered. There's a fellow that spoke, and somebody else mentioned the other night about thinking about yourself. And the guy said, you know, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And I may not be much, but I'm always thinking about myself, you know, and I try and get away from that now. I try not to think of myself all the time. I love hearing that clicking talk. This thing's going faster than I thought. Anyway, self-centeredness, trying to get rid of it. By admitting my mistakes and right away I can gain some humility. And it says that you gain humility by facing pain and our problems instead of running away from them and drinking. And we gain humility by facing our problems right away. And I can remember, you know, I'd do something and hope I wouldn't get caught 2 weeks later. And, you know, now I just admit it. And people are really amazed, you know. I'm sorry I did this. And they say, oh, well, okay, yeah, thanks, you know. And it doesn't come back to bite you. You don't have to worry about it farther down the road. It's a nice feeling to get rid of stuff like that, admitting I have made a mistake and I can get rid of it. It says in the book that each of us would like to live at peace with himself and his fellows. And that's all I want to do. That's what my old sponsor, Walter, said to me. He said, you know, like I said, if you can die sober and not hurt anybody. And he also always told me, he says, when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, he says, all you're going to get sobriety is sobriety day at a time. We're not going to get you a job. We're not going to get your wife back. We're not going to get you a big car. Just sobriety, and what you do with it is up to you. And my sponsor now that I have, he's 46 years sober this year. His home group is the Dugout in downtown Vancouver, right in Gastown. If you're ever in Vancouver, meeting every day there at 12:15, 12:30. Come on down there. It's a great meeting. I get a lot of gratitude. I was about 6 months sober, and there was a guy getting a 4-year cake at the Dugout. And he was so happy because he was getting a hotel room downtown with his own bathroom. And I'm thinking, here I am whining about my second car, and it's raining, and this guy's so happy he's getting this bathroom, you know. So the right people came to me at the right time in my sobriety. They were there when I needed them, and it's worked ever since. And I really appreciate, getting a chance to talk. This is the last meeting of the conference, except for the big one, so it's really something. And hopefully, if you're in Vancouver, you can come to the Newport Men's Group in Port Coquitlam for the men, and the women come out. We have 600 meetings a week in Vancouver, or a month, and it's a good bunch of alcoholics out there, good bunch of people. So I'd like to welcome you to come out to BC if you get a chance, and I'd like to thank you for my sobriety.
Thank you, Glenn. Well, one thing Glenn talks about is humility, and my sponsor used to say, stay humble or you will stumble. And I think when I first come around, I liked mostly to, I didn't want to work the steps or hear anything about the steps. And people would, I like the slogans, though, that would say, bring the body and the mind will follow. And I thought if I don't, I just sit there, something will happen, you know. I found out nothing would happen except more trouble. And until I started to work these steps. But they said to me, you know, bring the body and the mind will follow. And I thought, you know what? And they used to say things like, if you don't get the program will get you. And I was one of these belligerent ones that they talk about in the big book. I used to sit there, probably with a couple of drinks in my head, and say, if I don't get this damn program, the program will get me. And nothing ever would have got me until I realized that it was total abstinence, you know, and start to work the steps and come in here sober that I could hear something, you know. But no, I don't think so. I think it's a blessed program. It's the greatest thing ever happened to my life. Anyway, I will now ask Jim to come and say a few words.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jim Barr, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
For me, that may be the most important thing that I say this morning, because for many years I had no idea why I thought the way I thought and why I acted the way I acted. You know, when I first came around, people would say the people that had the most time were the ones that got up the earliest in the morning. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, we're the long-timers in this convention. You should have been around our motel room this morning at 3:30 when we were starting to get ready. My wife and I are staying with my sponsor and his wife, and my sponsor started to say, he said, I learned to drink hard and sleep fast. We were all trying to make light of getting up. My sponsor's wife said, well, you can't walk me to death, so she said, I guess you're just going to torture me now. So we made a lot of fun about getting up in the middle of the night to be here, but I'm sure glad we're here. You know, the subject this morning is Into Action, Steps 6 and 7. And I was reflecting this morning, I've never had any trouble getting into action. I mean, I was always about action. Right from the beginning, you know, I wanted to be where the action was. I wanted to be around fast cars, fast women, and booze. It just seemed to be natural. It was a question of the type of action that I was looking for. The first meeting that I attended in Alcoholics Anonymous, I went to a fellow that owned a business in our local community, and I knew he was an alcoholic. I don't know how I knew he was an alcoholic, and I don't know how I knew he was an AA. But you know, it's amazing, once we start going to work on a daily basis, once we start mowing the lawn, paying our bills, showing up at PTA meetings, the word gets out, and I just knew this guy was an alcoholic. And so he took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that became my home group. It's the Chautauqua Lake Group in Jamestown, New York. If you're ever in the area, please stop and see us. We meet on Mondays and Saturdays. But the format of that meeting on Mondays is there's a beginner's meeting at 7 o'clock, and then there's a 15-minute break, and then we have a closed discussion meeting. And this fella took me to my first AA meeting, and we went in and we got a cup of coffee, and we sat down, and we sat through that beginner's meeting. And in that 15-minute break, I stood in the middle of the room, and we refreshed our coffee. And as we were standing there, you know, he said, kind of leaned back, and he said, oh, gosh, Jim, he said, my back's kind of bothering me tonight, and the wife's expecting me. And he said, I think I'm going to go home. You stay here. And out the door he left. He left me standing right in the middle of that room. I was just scared to death. But, you know, as I look back at that, that gentleman was giving me a message at my very first meeting. It took me a long time to understand it. But he was saying, Jim, the answers are here, but you must do some work. You know, it's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that the members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon and Al-Anon team will love you. They will nurture you. They will sponsor you. They will mentor you. But I know from my own recovery, I had to become an active participant in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in order to have this psychic change, this spiritual experience that our book talks about. You know, this experience has been happening since man's been put on this earth, this psychic change, this change in the way we view the world. You know, when Roland Hazard went to Carl Jung, and Carl Jung worked with him, and Roland stayed there for a full year, and Dr. Jung worked with all of the information he had available at the time. And as Roland left him, he got drunk. And he went back and he talked with Carl Jung and he said, "Isn't there something you can do for me?" In the humility of Carl Jung, he said, "No." He said, "I've tried everything." He said, "For the last year, we've worked with everything that's within my understanding." And Roland Hazard said, "Isn't there anything?" And Carl Jung said, "Yes, here and there, once in a while, great psychic changes have happened to men." He said, "In fact, I've been trying to produce that within you." But he said, "I don't know how to do that." And so this process has been happening for years. And the power of the 12 steps that we have is it's a methodical procedure to create that psychic change that Carl Jung didn't know how to create in Roland Hazard. A good example of it is there's a book I read once in a while, and it talks about a fellow named Saul. And one day Saul was riding a donkey, a jackass, on his way to Damascus, and a bolt of lightning hit him, and it blinded him. And he heard a voice say, "Saul, we're going to change you. You know, you're hurting my kids. You're raping the women. You're stealing the tax money. I don't like the way you're acting, and we're going to change everything about you. And once we get your actions changed, we're going to change your name." And they changed Saul's name to Paul. Paul became one of the greatest spiritual writers we've ever had. He wrote most of the New Testament. So this process has been happening forever. As I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellow said, "We're going to get you into action." And they started right off with me, and they started having me greet people. They started to change me in the beginning, and I didn't know I was being changed. Everything we do in AA creates this change. And step 6 and 7 really accelerate it. But we must start where we are at, and the fellows knew early on that I could hardly understand anything about what this AA was. It was confusing to me. I never had anyone enter my life at this level. You gotta look where this clock is. There we go. They got us like we're a fried egg up here, guys. There's a little timer. We better stay with it. But you know, I came to AA and I had a guy enter my life that was going to sponsor me. And I didn't understand what was happening at all. I'd go to a discussion meeting, he'd be sitting on the left side of me. I'd go to the coffee shop, he'd be sitting on the right side of me. I'd go to work, he'd be talking to my secretary. I'd come home, he'd be sitting at my kitchen table talking to my wife. One night we were in a coffee shop after a meeting, and he said to me, he said, "Jim," he said, "I'm getting to you, aren't I?" I said, "David, you're just plain pissing me off." He said, "Jim, you show me an area of your life that alcoholism hasn't affected, and I'll stay out of it." Thank God for the old timers. He knew the pain in my heart. He knew the damage in my family's life, and he availed himself to the healing process. And he was observing me. He was looking to see what had to be changed in my life and in my actions. He knew alcoholism, and he knew how it affected a human being. And he entered my life. And so the change started right away is what I'm trying to share. People got me involved in making coffee, greeting, being involved in a home group, having a sponsor, learning to take advice, follow direction. And as I went through those steps, he guided me. He showed me where my life was unmanageable. He showed me in the second step where my thinking had been insane. And he explained to me that A, I was alcoholic, and B, no human power could relieve my alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he were sought. He went on to explain that my drinking was simply a symptom of my illness, that I had a problem that was much deeper than drinking. It took me a long time to understand that I couldn't trust my mind. I could not trust what my mind was saying to me. And he started me through turning my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over to the care of this God. He helped me make that decision. And he explained that it was simply just a decision and that I must take some vigorous action in order to fulfill that decision. And he said, Jim, he said, it's important that you see what you've turned over to God. And so he helped me with an inventory. And so I could see that self had been the problem, manifested in many, many ways. And as I got to the fifth step, he showed me the exact nature of my wrongs, my defects of character, the interchangeability of the words that Bill was trying to tell us, that we were selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened individuals, and how that was showing up in my life. And he said to me, Jim, if you could change this, he said, I've been around you enough. He said, I know you're a good human being. He said, I know you've tried with everything, every fiber of your being. He said, I've listened to you enough to know that you had a good education and that you had parents that loved you and you were given every opportunity. But then he said, Jim, you failed. Left on self-reliance, it availed you nothing. And I knew he was right. And he went on to explain to me that several months before I had surrendered my drinking. And a power greater than myself was waiting for me to surrender the rest of my life. And he said that you must be willing to go through this surrendering process. You know, once I started to understand the things that needed to be changed in me, I thought, okay, give me the $49.95 zap job. I'm ready. But it didn't work that way, see. David explained to me that I must work against the very habits that I had spent years in creating. And that I must work against my very nature. And that I didn't have the power to do that by myself. And so I must rely on this power greater than myself to give me the ability to do what I could not do by myself. And he continued to explain to me that that would create a relationship for me with this power. I knew that I wasn't drinking and I knew that I wasn't doing it. I knew there was a power working through me that was giving me the ability not to drink. And now David explained to me that I must continue to use this power to work against the things that were no longer of service to me, to my fellow man, and to God. I've tried to rely on that power, left to my own devices. Jim's the same as he was when he came in here. You gave me a set of principles, a set of steps, traditions, concepts, and constructive actions that have overridden the personality I brought in here. But I know deep within me that personality is still there. And I must vigorously practice these principles on a day-by-day basis to keep that personality suppressed. And to keep on being an open vessel that hopefully God will use periodically. You know, we're given something here that is so precious. And that's the ability to help another human being. God's always used people. We look at our history and, God used Dr. Silkworth. He used Roland Hazard. He used Ebbie Thatcher. He used Bill. He used Bob. He used my sponsor. I know he used your sponsor. And I think the question before us this morning is that if God's always used people and those people are gone, he's going to use us. But it's been my experience that we need to block a little time out of our lives so that we can be available to someone who has got a little bit of a drinking problem, thinks his life may be just a little unmanageable, and would like to find a new way of life. Thank God people understood that. It worked with me. You know, they availed themselves to the healing process. I wasn't lovable when I came around here. Believe me, I was no fun to be around. And yet they took time to sit and listen to me. There's a story I love to share about sponsorship, and then I'll wrap this up a little bit. But it has to do with a fellow that was in Chicago. And as he was in Chicago, he was standing and waiting for a bus, and he was standing next to a blind man. And as they were waiting for the bus, a stray dog walked across the street, and he walked up to that blind man. And he lifted his leg and urinated all over the blind man's trousers. And the blind man simply reached down and ever so gently started to pet the dog. Finally, the bystander couldn't contain himself anymore. He said, "Excuse me." He said, "I'm confused." He said, "I watched that stray dog walk directly up to you, lift its leg, urinate all over your trousers, and you simply gently reached down and ever gave him a few pets." And the blind man said, "Yes." He said, "That's true." He said, "You see, for me, it was necessary, for I had to find out where his head was at before I could kick him in the ass." So I'd like to tell you that I willingly went through six and seven, but I had sponsorship a lot like that dog. And fellas had to kick me in the ass. But they gently pointed me, after listening to my whining and petty peeves, towards a step or a tradition or constructive action that would make my tomorrows better. Thank God for that. You know, today I've got a life beyond my wildest dreams. I've got two grown adult children that sat around our kitchen table as you were trying to give me a few simple principles to rebuild a broken life. And they listened, and they've adopted those. Kathy and I this summer will be married 38 years, 16 of them drinking, 22 of them sober. And life's good today. Life's real good. Just to give you a little idea, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellas said to me, "Jim, shoot for the moon. And if you miss, you'll still be with the stars." I'm certainly with the stars in my life this morning, the sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous and the members of Al-Anon. Thank you so much for allowing me to share. God bless.
Thank you, Jim. We have to give it away in order to keep it. This is what my sponsor used to say to me. He used to say something about your life is like a barrel. And if you keep taking and taking and taking everything and you don't put anything back, when you go on there, there'll be nothing left. And I know exactly what they mean now. You know. I'd like to thank the speaker. All right, so I think now at this point we'll open up the floor and get a couple of speakers either side. Just for 3 minutes.
Hello, everyone. My name is Frank. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Francis.
From White Plains, New York. Gentlemen, thank you very much for a great message this morning. And man, the six and seven step for me was, I need to continue to work the six and seven. You know, I have a lot of defects, you know. Before I got here, I didn't even know what a defect was, you know. And my sponsor had pointed that out to me during my fifth step, you know. And I also had figured out I'm impatient, you know. I'm going to a serenity meeting, and I'm beeping the horn at everybody. And that's something I got to work at, you know. I'm going 50 miles an hour before I even get in the car, you know. And that's something I need to work at. I need patience with my children. You know, and I pray for that every day. There's just so many things that I need to work on. But what this program has given me is that I am aware of these things today. And I'm able to work on them instead of just pushing them aside, you know. Wow, this has been the best weekend. I just had to say that, you know. It's just going to hang out with 50,000 people, 50,000 friends, should I say, you know, it's just incredible. I have so much gratitude today, and I think I'm going to keep coming. You know, I see all these old timers up there, and it's just amazing. You know, that's how they got to be old timers, by coming. You know, I go to a meeting every day. I went to a bar every day. I can go to a meeting every day. You know, there's no excuse for me not to come. You know, I heard an old timer say once. You know, I said, "How do you get 40 years?" He says, "Go to meetings and don't die." You know, amazing. Thank you very much.
My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. And I've had a wonderful time this weekend. This is my third international. I've always wanted to get up here and say something at a marathon meeting, and I've always been too afraid to do that. And I was sitting there thinking that... You know, that I've learned in this program to face my fears or forever run from them. And my experience with the 6 and 7 step is I do the 7-step prayer every day. My sponsor taught me that when I got to that step that it was important for me to do that. And when I came in here this morning and I heard the topic of the meeting, what was the 6 and 7 step, I got in the shower this morning and left the hotel room and realized that I hadn't said that prayer. I usually say it in the shower. So I said it before I started. But one of the things that happened to me was the experience with this step was I was about 11 months sober, and I was 39 years old, and I had a Harley Davidson, and I thought it was real cool, and I would go to the meetings, and I would look for I'd look to do the 13th step is what I was doing, and I saw this really pretty girl. I was my second marriage had just ended, and I saw I, you know, me and this girl met, and we ended up getting together, and she was quite a bit younger than me, and it caused me a lot of pain, and I remember sharing that pain with my sponsor, and he said, "Come over," and he's a gardener, and he was out in his front yard trimming some bushes with his hedge clippers, and I pulled up in front of his house, and my head was hung low. I was really ashamed of myself for what I'd done and for the pain it was causing me, and full of self-pity. And when I got out, I walked up to him, and he started shaking his head at me, and he said, "Pat, if you'll whip it out, I'll gladly remove your defective character." He was, and he taught me that I don't really have to do anything but be willing. The pain of the defects, the pain that the defects in my life caused me, get me willing to humble myself before this God. He does for me what I can't do for myself, and He's continually removed from me these things that have been blocking me from Him and my usefulness to His kids. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love you people, and I love what you've given me in my life, and thank you.
Well, my name is Jerry G. from Brooklyn, New York. I want to thank the speakers for saying the things that they did. I am an alcoholic. On step 6 and 7, it gave me a chance to realize that, I wasn't in charge. A lot of my character defects, they talk about sponsorship. I had to humble myself, talk about what was going on, and realize that I couldn't use drinking as an excuse no more. When they talk about interaction, I was coming out of being a drunk for 28 years with no idea what was a character defect and what was Jerry. I picked up a drink at a very young age, but by going through 4 and 5 and getting honest with somebody, it's easy to say I'm going to do this step and then write everything down lying. But then when you throw God in, He knows what you're writing. It's hard to lie. And then to share that with somebody else and be honest, that was one of my biggest steps. And I found out that by making a lot of meetings, I had to still keep being honest. And my answer to that was, when I woke up in the morning, I asked not to hurt anybody. When I lay down at night, did I do anything to help somebody? Was it me, or was it the program that was helping me not to kick up a lot of my character defects? Today, by not drinking one day at a time, I'm a better person. I know I am. Yes, there's some things I still have to work on, because I can't say 28 years of drinking and 11 years and some change not drinking, that I'm well. I got to keep that up front. My character defects, when they do kick in, I have that word hope. I have to slow down, back up. What am I doing that's got me in this state that I'm getting ready to go back to old behavior? See, I know how to drink. That was never the problem. The problem was, how do I stop drinking one day at a time? It's the same thing with the character defects. I don't have to be an angel. I don't have to be a saint. All I have to be is a recovering alcoholic that don't pick up a drink one day at a time and work on myself, I've got plenty of people to work with me, They told me if I don't pick up a drink one day at a time, I'll never be lonely in my life, and that's the most important thing, My character defect before was drink, drink, hide, 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 Now I work on it where I can show up, be responsible, do the service for others, and be a service to myself. And I want to thank everybody. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. And I got sober in good old Bronx, USA. And I'm living in White Plains now, and very well connected and very grateful. You know, my step six and seven, what I found out, what I was taught in AA, was that my defects and my shortcomings were what helped me to survive through a crazy alcoholic household growing up and through my own alcoholism. But I was taught through the steps that AA is not about survival. It's about thriving. And those defects and shortcomings don't work anymore. You know, and six and seven, they're a tool to help me to change. You know, I want to be a better human being. I want to be of service. You know, and I have that opportunity. But it's hard work. You know, the hardest things in AA have been the best things for me. You know, I've learned to go through problems, not around them. And what a gift. What a gift. To be alive and to be sober and to be useful. You know, to live, to laugh, to love. You know, that wasn't happening when I was out there. And I wanted it to happen. You know, like it's been said, you know, we're good people. You know, and we're very human. You know, and sometimes we're very spiritual. You know, but we're also alcoholics. We've been given a gift of recovery that, you know, it's priceless, you know. And I'm very grateful. It's been a great weekend. This is my second convention. I hope to make about 10 more. And, you know, I have a disease of the Moors. What can I tell you? You know, I'm a feel-good junkie, and I want to keep feeling good. And if I just keep showing up, you know, and keep working it, you know, I have to work it. You know, and that's been said, you know, and it is worth it if you work it. You know, it is definitely beyond your wildest dreams. I could not have planned or could not even have dreamed of the life that I have today, you know. And I could not have dreamed of the pain and the growth. You know, he used to call my sponsor up and say, TJ, I'm having a bad day. He'd say, no, you're having a growth day. You know, and I don't want to choke him, you know, but that's what it's about. You know, it's about growing up, you know, and showing up and facing it. And the rewards, well, we know what the rewards are. But I have to keep coming to AA to be reminded of what those rewards are. Thank you very much.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Brenda, and I'm sober by the grace of God.
Hi,
everybody. It was really great to hear you all. Thank you for being willing. One of you mentioned that. It's in the step. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I used to go to 12 and 12s, and I always thought that the step 6 and 7 were kind of like fillers, just to kind of like make 12 steps, 12 months. You do one a month, you're going to be all set. And I loved that. I used to hear early on about the steps are in order for that order for a reason. Because I used to pick, you know, the ones that, well, this is works, this doesn't. And I didn't think I had any character defects. You know, I got here and I thought I caught them from all you people. Well, like my alcoholism, you know, it's mine. You know, the character defects are mine. And, you know, I found out that until I did a fourth, you know, fearless and thorough moral inventory, until I shared it, I did a fifth with my sponsor, I didn't know what my character defects were. I mean, you mentioned them, you know, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And, you know, I'll tell you, I had, you know, I finished my fifth step with my sponsor. I went home. I spent the time with God. You know, I read over the first five proposals, and I read six and seven. 100% perfect, alone in my apartment without anybody there. You know, because I don't play well with others. I have too much fear. You know, I mean, if you don't do it my way, it's not going to work out. I have fear people aren't going to be okay. You know, and you have to go out and live in the world. And that's where I have to practice, you know, working on my character defects. Somebody mentioned gossip. I don't remember which. Does it matter? And I have a lot of trouble with that in work, you know. Like, we have cubicles. People are always hanging over your cubicle, telling you things about other people. And I want to be part of that. I want to know what's going on where, you know. And I can't do it. You know, I really can't, because I get itchy. I don't feel comfortable. It's not working. And people don't get it, that you can't operate like that. They really don't. But they really don't have to. You know, they really don't. And, You know, I'm not a good judge of how I operate. I've heard almost every speaker this weekend talk about a sponsor. You know, I need a sponsor because I'm not a good judge of how I'm operating. And because I call her up and I'll say things like, well, you know, it happened, this happened, and I said this, and I really, you know, I advocated for myself. She says, well, you might have tried a different tact, you know. Then I call up and I say, well, I didn't say anything because, she says, well, you might have been able to speak up for yourself. I go, you know, but that's why I need her, you know, because I can do the same thing with sponsees, you know, like, take my advice. I'm not using it. You know, and it really works. One drunk help on another. You know, we share our experience. And I know from experience that, you know, God, it says in, I'm not sure which one, I think it's the 12 and 12, you know, it says he's going to remove my character defects under the conditions of the day. And the condition is that I don't practice them. You know, I don't practice self-seeking behavior. You know, what does God want? I don't get bring God into the picture all the time at all. Because I know. But my view gets very limited because of my fear. You know, the other character defect. And, you know, she said, I had one more thing to say about that. But naturally, it leaves your mind. But I know that it works. I know that if I don't pick up a drink, the obsession is going to be removed. God will do that for me. And I don't practice the character defects. They're going to be removed, too. But anyway, thank you all for your willingness to be here.
Thank you. We have some more speakers.
My name's John Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John Paul.
And I live in Kingston, Ontario. I've been in the program almost 13 months. I've done step 5. A good Catholic boy. I did it with a Roman Catholic priest who's also in the program, and it worked quite well. And one of my character defects is a bit like the previous person who shared, is, you know, sort of a fear of, I want to do it on my own, and I want to, you know, I mean, that's the way I got through university, basically, was I never went to class, and the reason might be obvious to most people here. I read the book and figured it all out and got an engineering degree, basically, on my own. But I'm learning this morning from everybody who's spoken so far and the two officials, formal speakers, that the sponsorship part of the program is important. And after I'd done step 5, I phoned my sponsor and I says, okay, let's get on with step 6 and 7. And the answer was, and I'm looking around the room carefully here, how's your back? Because I've got to move some stuff from my cottage. And I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and I know what I have to do, but I'm afraid to do it. And that's sort of, I'm learning this morning. I mean, every time I come to an AA meeting, I learn. And I'm going to have to do what everybody, I think, understands is necessary and you know, go, you know, have a sort of a one-to-one and get a new sponsor who's willing to work the steps, because I don't think, like the program's set up that way. I've sort of been thinking up until this weekend, quite frankly, well, I'll sort of keep him as a sponsor, but I'll do it on my own, and I'll use just the way I got it, you know, got through engineering. I'll do it on my own. I'll do it out of the book, and maybe I'll ask a few people around some meetings to, you know, for a few tips, and hey, you know, how did you do this, and how did you do that? But what I'm learning this morning, and I'm glad I'm here, is, you know, I have to sort of bite the bullet and, you know, find somebody who's going to work, like, step 6 through 12 with me. And, you know, people were talking earlier about, you know, the higher power speaks to us through people. Well, you know, I think all of you here have spoken to me, and I thank you very much, and appreciate the support I get from everybody. It's been a great weekend. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jewel, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank the speakers this morning. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I live in a community called Inglewood. I've been sober since May the 11th. Thank you. 1987. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. This is my second conference. My first one was in San Diego, and my sponsor made me go. Step 6 and 7 was at that conference for me, and that's where I was. It was about 8 years sober. And when I looked in the book last night and I saw step 6 and 7, I knew I was responsible to get here this morning, even though I didn't get to bed until 1:30, 2 o'clock. But in that conference in San Diego, there was an old-timers at the old-timers meeting, and I was sitting way up top because there were a lot of people there, and there were no spaces down below. And there was a speaker, and I know he came there just for me. He was from Illinois, and I don't remember his name, but he said that he had done countless of inventories, and he was not his driver, something to the effect that he thought that he was not his Chevy, but he was only the driver. And I knew exactly what that meant because I had done countless of inventories. And the big book, you know, is a simple book for complicated minds. And my mind is complicated. And so what happened was, it says that in the big book, it says that you go home, you take the big book down, and then you're there at 5, 6, step 6 and 7. You know, the 12 and 12 was written for a reason, because it is the step to separate the man from the boys. And what had happened, my sponsor told me that you can take inventory, you can clean house, but you can fill it back up with the same stuff that you took the inventory on. And that's what happened to me. You know, I had started walking on the carpet, and some of my character defects had began to come back up. And I didn't know what to do. But in that conference, that man told me what to do. So I went home, I got out my 12 and 12, and I started digging. Today when I sponsor people, after the fifth step, I tell them to get their 12 and 12 and get busy, because I really do believe that it is a step to separate the men from the boys, and it's not a step that you just do. It's a step that, for me, that I have to do on a constant basis. I'd like to thank you all. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm a drunk driver, and I just have to say this. And I thought when I was getting up this morning, I was like, how did they survive in Canada? You know, because they're so hard on drunk drivers, you know. And I thought everybody must be either walking in Canada or sober. But anyway, I was directed through the state of California to be brought to Alcoholic Anonymous, and for that, I'm eternally grateful. Thank you for allowing me to share.
My name is Mike B. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic from Cleveland, Ohio. I first want to thank the speakers. It's beautiful, and I want to thank the gentleman who read the 12 steps, because I agree with you. Those 12 steps are, you know, a way of life. It's a blueprint for living, and without it, I'd be dead. And thank you to the chairman. It's been my pleasure to be here all night, since midnight, and I love these marathon meetings. You know, my sobriety date is March 14th, 1988. The last time I was in Canada was 1985 at the International Convention. I came into AA through the back door, through Al-Anon, and I'm forever eternally grateful to Al-Anon, beautiful people. What was very interesting about that time in 1985 up in Montreal, at 4:30 in the morning, I sat and I listened to a man speak on the 12 promises. And, you know, those 12 promises, he passed out a card, he had printed them out, and you know, really gave a beautiful, you know, momentum. I kept that on my wall for a long time, but what struck me about that is I sat in the back row near the back with my girlfriend at the time and another friend who has now passed on. And when I read those and I listened to that, I said, boy, for everybody else, but not for me. And I just couldn't imagine that. This is truly a gift. There was a woman here earlier. I think she stepped out of the room. She gave a program on emotional sobriety this weekend. You know, to listen to her story and the other people that spoke, it's really beautiful. She talked about never taking sobriety for granted. And she has a very powerful example of how that is. It's been a beautiful night. I spent some time yesterday at the marathon meeting, too. There's a few left out here who have been here all night, too. You know, that last meeting was a meeting in my pocket. And on the A, you know, they were talking about the grapevine. And you know, we are so fortunate, those who live in bigger cities, that we have so many meetings available to us. Toronto's one of those, Cleveland's one of them, you know, across. But there's a lot of remote areas that don't have that, and I never want to take that for granted either, nor do I want to take my sobriety. And it really is one day at a time. And I just want to close by reading those 12 steps in honor of that program back in 1985. And everybody that's been here all night, and everybody's put this conference on, it's a beautiful thing to be here back here in Canada at this international convention. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word. We will comprehend, I'm sorry, it's been a long night, the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And I got to say, you know, by the grace of God, here I am, and those promises have come true. Thank you very much.
My name is Martin. I'm an alcoholic from Palmer, Alaska, Foxhall in Palmer, Alaska. Thanks for the promises. I live for those. Thanks. One of the favorite games I ever played when I was a young boy, kid, was to go and knock on people's doors or ring their doorbells and then run away. And I sort of never really grew out of that, you know, because with my relationships, with my career, with my successes, everything, I would sort of ring the doorbell and run away. And applied that to pretty much everything in my life. And luckily, gratefully, I'm an alcoholic because it brought me to, you know, you people and these rooms and to Toronto, and it's amazing. I celebrated 10 months during this conference of sobriety, so I'm grateful for that. And sort of ringing that doorbell, you know, here's AA is answering the door. My sponsor is on the other side of that door, and I'm ringing the doorbell, and this time he's not letting me run away because I've got this heavy backpack full of pride and ego and selfishness, and I can't move fast enough to get away. And my sponsor sort of grabbed me by the backpack and is showing me how to set that backpack down, to take the load out of that pack and set it down so that I can fit through that door. And I thank everybody here at this convention for giving me that glimpse in my early sobriety of what's on the other side of that door and what I have to look forward to, and those promises hopefully fulfilled in my life, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Georgie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Georgie.
I come from South Australia, and my home group is Coffin Bay, Monday night. Very, very small group, 5 or 6 of us. I have had the most amazing experience being here. I'm completely overwhelmed. I knew I had to get up early this morning and come to this meeting and just express my gratitude. My sponsor in Australia is an American woman with 25 years sobriety, and I've been very grateful to have her because she's guided me through the steps. And steps 6 and 7 I won't talk about for very long. I know my character defects still lurk beneath the surface. Some of them seem to be removed, and I can tell that by my relationships with people. For example, my sister doesn't lock the gate of her house when she knows I'm coming. She loves me and she wants to see me. My children are loving towards me and have forgiven me, and I know that that is because this program has shown me that I don't have to be the boss of them and I don't have to interfere in their lives. And that's been a huge character defect of mine that I've had to be willing to have removed. And I know that it's an ongoing process. And with the help of my higher power and new people and my sponsor, the journey is just ongoing. And thank you very much to the Toronto organisers and to all you wonderful people, because I've had the best time of my life. I'll never forget it. Thank you.
Morning. My name's Lee Rigby. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is Spiritual Solutions in Sag Harbor, New York. And I want to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. I just want to say that I feel like I've been so taken care of at this conference with my higher power and all of you all. People just have showed up in my life this weekend when I really needed them. You know, coming in from the airport, people were there for me to show me how to get here, you know. And, I just surrendered, you know, kept turning it over and trusting my higher power that I've been taken care of. And I'm just so profoundly grateful. Some of my character defects showed up at the conference also, especially being tired and overwhelmed and fear and isolation and loneliness. And I feel like I was led to reach out, you know, to other people and tell people how I was feeling and get out of myself. And, you know, I was relieved of my character defects. And then I was feeling sorry for myself, and I hooked up with some other people and shared what I was going through, and I was relieved of that character defect, you know, temporarily. I know it's all on a temporary, one day at a time basis, but I just wanted to share that, you know, this program for me truly works, you know, if I'm willing, as we said in the beginning. It does work, and I feel like I've been given my life back, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bernadette. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bernadette.
Hi. I'm a member of the Friday night Back Bay Steps in Boston, and I'm sober today through the grace of God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. My first international convention was in Montreal. I was 5 months sober. I took a bus from Boston. I knew nobody on the bus. I had no place to stay. You have to be 5 months sober to do something like that. And I had no idea really what an international convention or any convention was supposed to be or what was supposed to happen. And someone gave me, you know, the list, and I guess I just kind of wandered for the weekend. And I ended up with a place to stay and the whole nine yards, and I had, like, the best time of my life. And I remember walking down from the main meeting, and I literally felt like I was walking on a cloud. I never got that feeling from any drug or any drink I ever took in my life. And I still remember faces and things that I heard from people. And, you know, I decided at that convention that I was never going to miss another one, and I haven't. And I said that I would, you know, but I was going to plan better. I was going to have a place to stay, and I have ever since, and I've been really grateful for that. But I just was thinking, like, when people were talking about the difference between when I was in Montreal and the whole process of my recovery and where I am today. And I'm a very different person than I was in Montreal. And yet, you know, I'm actually more myself than I ever was. I'm more the person that God wanted me to be. I'm more the person that God created when I was born. And I'm very grateful for that. I stood the other night with all of you people and sang Amazing Grace. And I remember in Seattle, I cried the whole time that happened. And on Friday night, I couldn't stop smiling. I just felt like so happy. And I know it doesn't mean anything to anyone here because they don't know me, but I cried and cried and cried, and for me to stand there and smile and not feel in the least bit like crying is an absolute miracle. And I'm very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel very privileged to be able to stand here and share this meeting with everyone, and thank you very much.
We just have one more speaker now.
Good morning. My name is Sherlyn, and I'm from Limerick, Ireland. Hi, good morning. And I'm very grateful that I got up at 5.30 to hear the speakers until I heard Jim saying, I thought I was dead at 5.30 until I heard Jim saying he got up at 3.30, and then I didn't feel so bad. And when I came into this program, which was on the 4th of July, which is tomorrow, Independence Day, I didn't know how relevant that was until I'd been through this program, until I figured out, you know, how independent I can be. And that was the 4th of July in 1980. And my sponsor told me when I came into this program, and it's relevant to the steps we're speaking about, she said that this program will help you do the things that you don't want to do and help you not do the things you want to do. And I have discovered that over the years that I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've also discovered, of course, as Jim said, that it's very easy to talk. Like, it's a lot harder to walk. And I have also discovered, as he said, that inside of me, you know, is still the same Geraldine that drank. And it's a constant struggle to make sure that the program wins and that the what I want to do and what the program is telling me to do, that that gulf never gets too wide and that I keep it close so that I'm actually able to be, again, as the chairperson said, honest, you know, and willing. And they're really the things I need every day to help me in this program. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, we ran out of time, and I hope everyone enjoyed the meeting as much as I did. I would like to thank my two wonderful speakers, Glenn and Jim. I would also like to thank Dan for asking me to chair this meeting. I'm from Barbados, so I'm a bit new over here. I would also like to thank John for reading the steps, and I would like to thank Myrna for reading the traditions. So now, would those who wish, and I would also like to thank all everybody else who came tonight to this meeting to make it a success. We also have some tags here for anybody that participated or spoke that they can have after the meeting is closed. And now we'll read the responsibility declaration. I am responsible.
I am responsible.
Could hold hands. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. Thank you very much. Keep coming back.